That's right. We're here live on Blog Talk Radio for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. We are presented today by Impact Media. Hope you guys are having a good week. I know we are. Today I am joined by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing fine, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I am doing just spiffy. It's been an interesting week. Of course, I am Jeremy the Impact York. Once again, thanks for joining us. Just a handful of things we want to get to today. Trust me, we're not going to beat the Super Bowl to death. We're really going to get more in-depth next week on it. And, you know, maybe we're going to see if we can get out of here a little early tonight. I know, Coach, you wouldn't mind that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, we got a few stories we'll get to, but I want to start real quickly by saying that inconspicuous in his absence, Reggie was the only person to predict a winner last week as far as any of our picks when he picked Carolina, who absolutely railroaded Arizona. I didn't see this coming. Did you see that, Coach?
No, absolutely not. I think the thing with Arizona and the reason why I picked Arizona is because I looked at a couple of factors. When you're looking at the NFL, you're most definitely looking at matchups. And when you look at the receiving core of Arizona against the secondary of Carolina, there was no way that they should have matched up if they go to a spread and a shotgun formation with them having Fitzgerald, having Floyd, Wilson, a couple other things in their repertoire. It would have been very difficult had they gone to that type of formation for Carolina to cover all of those areas without playing zone coverage. And also that means that they would have had to pull out a linebacker and put in an extra DB, and I don't think they had five DBs that could do that.
Yeah, I think Arizona really could have benefited by having the Honey Badger. But since they didn't, Cam kept being Cam pretty much and put on a pretty good show. I mean, I'd have to say that even on Cam Newton standards, he kind of played a little above his average even.
I agree. I mean, Cam is an excellent football player. He is the new wave of what you're going to see coming to the NFL in those 6'5", 230, 240, 250 type of quarterbacks that have the ability to scramble and run with strong arms. So Cam himself, he's durable, and he has a tenacity about him right now that he's bringing to the game that you haven't seen for quite some time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. He's definitely the leader in the clubhouse, at least, of this new wave of quarterbacks. I mean, even though Russell Wilson's smaller, I'd say he's in there. The Kaepernicks, the RG3s, if they can revitalize their career. But yeah, definitely. You look into college and the Clemson guy that we all like, Watson. He's kind of that next wave as well.
Yeah, I agree. And you're going to start. And you must understand the NFL is very trendy. And there are times in which the league will go through phases, and right now it's hitting its quarterback phase where you're starting to see the taller quarterback come back, the more athletic quarterback. And that's simply due to the fact that the lines are now getting so much faster. D-linemen are so much quicker now in their first 2 to 3 steps. When you look at Beasley, you look at some of these younger guys that are coming through, and look at guys that have developed over the last couple of years in J.J. Watt. Now if you got to have a quarterback that can throw and or extend plays from outside the pocket as well as step up in the pocket and be durable enough to take those blows and still deliver the ball to the receivers. Either way, they have to be a tougher breed of quarterback now than ever before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, as far as the other quarterback, Carson Palmer, went, I don't know that I've seen him play this bad, and that includes his time as a Raider. We know he's got the skills, but he just looked like he wasn't prepared. Maybe it was the time difference. Maybe it was the weather, the field conditions, because they play not only on the West Coast, but they play inside a dome, you know, 2/3 of their games.
Well, you know, as a professional athlete, you're going to face all type of environments. So I can't let the environment play a role in it. I think players understand, and if you play – football long enough, whether it was college and or in the pros, that you have these time differences all throughout your season. What I saw in Carson Palmer was a person that just was totally lost. I don't think it had anything to do with preparation as much as it had something to do with just where he was mentally in the game. He missed a lot of passes, high percentage passes, which told me then he was in trouble. I was a little taken back that the coach did not make the change, as he possibly stated that he wanted to see what was going to happen 5 minutes into the third quarter. Once that 5 minutes elapsed, then I was a little shocked that he didn't make the change, because, again, Stanton could step in, has won games, and that's another reason why highly favored Arizona over them, because, again, if they were to have lost Palmer, they still were not going to struggle with the backup quarterback that they had, since they had played with him a number of games throughout last year and even this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree. Yeah, I favored Arizona for pretty much the same reasons. Just matchup-wise, I felt like the Carolina's luck was going to run out eventually. And honestly, after watching them win 49-15 over the weekend, I don't know that their luck's going to run out this year. I think they've got to be the heavy favorite regardless of what the line is.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, if you're looking at it from that perspective, my only concern is at this point there are a couple of factors that will most definitely play a role in this Super Bowl. One is the 50th anniversary of the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Two, Peyton Manning is probably on – this is his last go-round. I don't think he's going to do anything else after this Super Bowl. I think this is it for him, and this will be his kind of farewell party. So in my hearts of hearts, I think Carolina athletically can run with them. I think they are riding a high that they have not come off of as of yet. But I think that the factors of whether or not the – referees or this officiating crew is going to allow them to play that game to the very end and give the fans a spectacular Super Bowl, because again, you're going to know this very quick in the first two offensive series of both teams. If you find Cam Newton getting hit like Tom Brady, and then you turn around and you find Peyton Manning barely being touched as he did when he first came back, when they get within the first 3 yards and the ball's gone, they're going to quick whistle, or if you push them to the ground hard, they're going to throw a flag saying roughing the passer, then that's going to change. That will change the dynamics of the game. I just hope that they will allow them to play this game out in its entirety.
Absolutely. And swapping over to the other game, I will get to I actually have a prediction here about where Peyton Manning's going to be next year and what he'll be doing, but we'll get to that in a minute. You know, watching that game, New England, you know, just losing by 2, 18-20 to Denver. Honestly, if you watch the game, it felt like it should have been closer to the other score, because Denver dominated on almost every front, and what little bit of progress New England made, it seemed like they lucked into.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little taken back at the fact that New England didn't tag some plays. I saw where they ran a lot of in and or crossing routes to try to, you know, get some guys confused, because they played a lot of man-to-man. Denver plays a lot of man-to-man. But one of the things that I was shocked that they didn't do is that they didn't tag routes. So when I speak of tagging routes, as a defensive coordinator, basically they run these crossing routes, and they run them in, and then they basically turn them back out. So they would run a deep in, and then they would pop back out to an arrow route. And so I was a little shocked they didn't tag some routes to try to give Brady a better area in which to put the ball. But one thing I must say, and I got to give a hats off to the defensive coordinator and that coaching staff of Denver, they were very well prepared for any and everything that New England could have possibly pulled out of their arsenal of offense. And the biggest thing that they did is that they never once allowed Tom Brady to get comfortable. They ran some of the most beautiful stunts I've ever seen played in the game as a defensive coordinator. I mean, every place he tried to step up or roll out to, there was a Denver body or player in that presence making sure that he stayed uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely that. Defensively, Denver sent all kinds of different looks, mainly a lot of crazy coverages, a lot of stuff that you won't see on film this year from them. And I believe, if the number's correct, of the 60 offensive plays, or 60 defensive plays rather, that Denver had, that only like somewhere between 8 and 10 of them were actual blitzes or were actual more than a four-man rush. It was all 3 and 4-man rush up front for them.
Yeah, they pinned back their ears and they really let New England have it. And one of the things I thought New England would try to do was at least put Tom in more shotgun or pistol formation, so at least he would be able to see it. They came up out from under center a number of times, which was kind of shocking to me. But again, I don't think it would have mattered because they prepared for every level of that game, and their defense just totally dominated the offensive line in New England, which is a rarity. You just don't see that often.
Yep, absolutely. And like I said, we'll talk a little more about Super Bowl as far as our picks and our breakdown next week, but that's up the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers, Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco. I think no matter how you look at the matchups, no matter how you look at how they got here, just straight up, this game's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
It should be a lot of fireworks in it.
It should definitely be. And like I said, we're going to refrain from beating it to death like a lot of people will for the next 2 weeks. So we'll just leave it right now that by next week we'll at least have picks, if not our breakdowns. But moving on, we'll go through the Peyton story since we just talked about him. Supposedly at the 50-yard line after the game, Peyton Manning told Bill Belichick that this may be his last rodeo. I don't think that's – what is it, letting the cat out of the barn or something like that? I think we all pretty much knew that, right?
Yeah, I think that was the only reason why he came back. Had Denver not been as close as they were in the last 2 years, I think Peyton would have retired the last Super Bowl that they had. But with that being the case, I think he had something to prove. He's leaving. Win or lose, this will be the last time you probably see Peyton Manning in a jersey. I think he hangs the cleats up after this. He's had a great, outstanding career in the National Football League. I'll be utterly surprised if I saw him playing again next year. I mean, really surprised. You can see he's beat up. You can see the velocity on the ball has changed over the years. You can just see he's worn there. He has a lot of, you know, he's long in the tooth at this point. And now it's best to walk away with the game with some health now because, you know, he did suffer, you know, injuries over the last 2 or 3 years that have been very difficult for him to just bounce back from each and every year.
Yep, absolutely. The only other main thing coming out about him is the NFL is actually investigating the HGH thing, but just like I said when it first came out, it happened during the lockout when he was not under contract. The stuff was supposedly sent in his wife's name to that house, so there's no way in the world to ever prove that he even touched the stuff nor knew about the stuff. And I mean, it won't matter one way or the other because there wasn't HGH testing. It wasn't illegal back then.
I think it's just another thing that's being used to kind of mask something else.
Right,
I mean,
right.
If all of those factors are there and those are facts, then I don't even know why we're having a discussion about the HGH at this particular point in time because even if – let's just say he tested positive for HGH at the – you know, they didn't have the testing in place. So
right.
Whether he took it or not is neither here nor there. There was no testing in place. It wasn't illegal at the time. He wasn't under contract. Nothing came directly to him. So it's really a moot point to even talk about.
Exactly. That's why we took the high road on it. And we said that this thing should be not even thrown under the rug. It should be thrown out completely. But before I do forget, my prediction for next year, and I'll get you to weigh in real quick before we move on. My prediction is that next year Peyton Manning will not be a player in the league, but that he will be part of an ownership group, and I think it's going to be the Tennessee Titans.
I can very well see that. I don't know if Tennessee will be his claim to fame, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know if he's going to just take the time off and allow his body to heal and kind of rest his mind. Or if he immediately just jumps right into the fire and goes into ownership. It'll be real interesting to see what Peyton does, but I do strongly believe that this will be his last game.
Yep, absolutely. I see him as – it's really weird that him and John Elway have similar paths as far as their careers. I see him being the next Elway anyway, either a high executive or a big-time owner that really changes the face of the league.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting to see. Like I said, you know, I'm sure he has planned his retirement and probably has had a plan in place for the last 5 years as to why he struggled the last three on returning year after year. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. But, again, I wish him the best of luck.
Definitely so. And we'll move on to the Pro Bowl where they drafted the teams last night. For the most part, it looks like one's pretty heavy on NFC guys, one's pretty heavy on AFC guys. We both know that being the big fans we are and of the league and everything, that we'll catch at least part of this on TV. But it comes down to Team Rice versus Team Irvin. Now, I'm going to ask this two different ways. One on a personal basis and the other one on a on-field, like on-field and off-field, basically. Who would you rather have, you know, on the field, Jerry Rice or Michael Irvin?
Well, you know, that's a tough one because both of those gentlemen are outstanding players, and they both have had some interesting careers outside of football, in business and things of that nature, and, you know, Mr. Irvin being in broadcasting. But I guess I would have to say Rice. I would have to say Rice just because he played so long as the game was evolving. I think that when Michael Irvin, again, no pun intended for Mr. Irvin, I think that the game had already somewhat arrived when he got into the NFL, whereas Jerry Rice played with the evolution of the game. And that's how I kind of weigh in on that subject, the fact that, you know, he had been around and he watched the game grow in many different facets and was able to still maintain that level of professionalism and high play. I would have to go with Jerry Rice.
Yeah, and of course there is no wrong answer, no matter how you ask this. But, I got to side with Rice, and the deciding factor in this is that Joe Montana threw to Jerry Rice for, you know, 85% of his career, and Montana is still my top of all time. So, as far as on-field, I'd take Rice. As far as off-field, which one would you rather have?
You know, off-field, I think I would have to take Mr. Irvin. I think he's a little more boisterous. I think he has a little more color to him, if you will, as far as his character, especially what he does. Because what he does now is relative to now, as far as his broadcasting. Now, again, that doesn't mean Mr. Rice by no means doesn't fit in that category. He did some Dancing with the Stars. He actually won it. But I think when you're talking about in the football community right now and what's happening now in the now, I have to go with Mr. Irvin.
Yeah, I got to agree. You know, Rice may color outside the lines a little bit, but you're not going to get any more colorful than Michael Irvin without going to Deion Sanders, I think. Those are by far the two most colorful people in NFL history off the field.
I agree.
But, you know, good luck and congratulations to all the people that made it to the Pro Bowl. You can check out NFL.com that has all the list of all the people in it. There's four Falcons. We'll get into that later on. But I wanted to get to some of these other stories real quick. Let's see. The creators or the founders of the P90X exercise system have offered to help Eddie Lacy drop weight. You know, even Mike McCarthy, as head coach, has kind of mentioned that he's getting a little pudgy, a little more round than they want him. You think he should look into this?
Absolutely. I noticed looking at him in the playoffs, he struggled. He could hardly pick his feet up. He looked more like a fullback than a running back. He brings a lot more attributes to the game than what he was able to give. He ran out of gas a lot. He needs to shed about 40 pounds. I mean, 40 pounds is a safe number to put on him right now to get him back down to a good playing weight where he can be versatile again and show his skill set.
Yeah, absolutely, because to me, the things that kept Green Bay alive this year was their running game, because Aaron Rodgers still put up his numbers. I mean, he kind of had a Matt Ryan type year where even though he didn't have the best receiving core around him, he still was able to get 4,500, 5,000 yards, whatever it is. I mean, he's still Aaron Rodgers, but to me, without the running game, I don't think they would have made the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, but again, you know, that it struggled. Their running game struggled. I think Lacy could have played a bigger role had he probably not been as heavy, where he could have had, you know, just had those breakout numbers that he had the year before.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not trying to throw you under the bus or get you in trouble here, because I know you got a lot of friends in that direction. But, yeah, I think they've got to stay on top of this, because they tried to stay on top of it before he was able to drop weight and he started running better. And then for some reason, it's like he decided to eat every Dunkin' Donuts, you know, donut he could find. And I just, I mean, I don't know what goes through a player's head to where you can just let yourself go in a season.
Well, and also the dangers behind the weight, the additional weight so rapidly throughout the season or gaining throughout the season is that the injuries are harder to keep off because now you're carrying this extra weight on your body and it's stressing your joints a little bit more than normal. So you already or you have girth as a running back, as most athletes do. You know, they have thicker bodies. So now when you add the additional weight, you're just adding the additional pressure to your joints. And then as you go on this balloon diet, if you will, where you go, where you get bigger, you get lighter, you get bigger, you get lighter, then it just stresses the body altogether.
Yeah, exactly. And moving on, we got four more stories I'm going to try to get to in the next handful of minutes here. New England fired offensive line coach Dave DeGuglielmo. I know how to pronounce his name because I had a teacher named that, oddly enough. But to me, it's just somebody had to take the blame. Somebody had to fall on the sword here. And I mean, with the play of the offensive line in that game against Denver, I think that might be the right person to fall on the sword.
Well, you don't want anyone to lose their job, but if there
no.
had to be blame placed anywhere, by far you saw a decline in the offensive line tremendously. For Brady to be hit that many times, and this is times two games. So it was, I'm sure it wasn't an impulsive move as much as it was as they looked at evaluating the coaches and evaluating their units and which they're responsible for. I mean, I think all fingers pointed toward a couple of things as it pertained to their numbers going up in a direction negatively that they were not happy with.
Right, and I know you as a former coach can identify with this too. A lot of times organizations look at, I can fire one coach or I can fire 8 to 10 players. It's a lot easier to just get rid of the coach and go in a different direction.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, good luck to him in the future. I'm sure he will find
He'll find work somewhere.
Yeah, that I don't think that's going to be hard for him, but I think those games, unfortunately, we are also evaluated based on win and loss. And so with that being the case, that makes it just as tough.
Yeah, definitely so. I really do think Dave DeGuglielmo will find work somewhere, possibly next season, possibly, you know, a season down the road or something. He's a good coach. It's just, like I said, when you look at how many times Brady was knocked around, the offensive line couldn't hold off a 3 or 4 man rush most of the time. So, I mean, most of the time the coach gets the axe at that point, unfortunately, and do wish Dave the best on his future endeavors. Philadelphia has extended the contracts of both tight ends, which kind of tells you the direction the offense is probably going. A lot of, I think they're called 2-1 sets or 1-2 sets, where it's one wide receiver, two tight ends. But
tight ends now becoming a very a lucrative market and a very valuable player because the matchups, again, when you're talking about the National Football League, you're talking about matchups. And now these guys are former basketball players that are now playing tight end and receiver in your league now. And so now when you look at success of the tight end position and you look at those of past Winslow and you look at the Gonzalez's of the world and Gronkowski's now and you look at and please forgive me because I see his face, but his name slips me over in Dallas.
Jason Witten.
Witten and those guys, they are now demanding a market with Jimmy Graham. And the list goes on and on with tight ends now. And they are becoming a very, for the lack of better terms, a jewel. That makes a huge difference in your passing game as well as your running game. So they become this huge utility player now, whereas in the day they used to be blocking, they just was another lineman on the field to help block in the running game. Now they're a very intricate part of your offense.
Yep, and of course, Brent Celek gets a 3-year extension with $13 million guaranteed, I believe, or maybe it's 3-year, $13 million. Zach Ertz gets 5 years, $42.5 million. Based off market value, that's right on par with probably what most of the top guys are getting anyway.
Yeah, he's getting top dollar for what he's doing.
Yep, And as soon as they figure out their quarterback situation, which they may have already handled, they may already know who it's going to be. It could be Bradford. But either way, they're not really tipping their hand, but they're letting people know that they're going to be running a dual tight end set a lot of times, which is a just defensive nightmare.
Yeah, I agree.
Next to last story we got here is Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers broke his arm during the game against Arizona, which was pretty unfortunate. He's already had surgery, and according to the team doctors, and Thomas Davis, he says he's going to play. He's just going to have a cast on, but he's going to play in the Super Bowl.
I don't foresee that. I don't see how he'll be effective. I think he's great for morale, but again, we're talking about the biggest game in your career, and again, I don't know how effective he could be with that arm. More importantly, re-injuring the arm as close as it has been. So I don't know if that's enough time with surgery, a hard cast or a rounded cast that allow him to be effective in the game. I mean, you know, again, the coaching staff will determine that, but I'm not sure how effective he can really be.
Right. This could be a lot like the Patriots are pretty known for doing, is, you know, kind of playing around with the will he play, will he not play, back and forth all the way up until game time when they have to announce it, to where they'll either say, yeah, he's going to play, or, nah, he's not going to make it. And it makes it hard for the other team to plan accordingly.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think that he is a factor. He becomes one of those factors. If this was a couple of weeks and the injury was there a couple of weeks, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and now they're downgrading him from a full-fledged cast to, you know, just a hardened and or a softened cast, then maybe that plays a role. But at this point, I don't see where it plays a huge role, and I don't think he's going to be that type of factor. Again, you know, things can change. However, I realistically don't see that with the type of injury that he has.
Yeah, I think time's going to tell on that one, but if I had to take a guess, I would agree with you. I don't think he plays. And, of course, the last thing we're going to get to, it actually wasn't on the rundown sheet, but I saw it this morning, and it's worth talking about. The New York Jets are going to pay $324,000 to their cheerleading staff for, apparently, they didn't pay them for a lot of other appearances and practices and, you know, really just, apparently they didn't pay them for a bunch of events leading up to this. And the Jets say in paying this $324,000 settlement to their cheerleaders, or to the group of cheerleaders in question, they're not admitting guilt. They just don't want to take this to court.
Well, I'm not familiar with what happened, so you have to kind of give me a quick synopsis of what took place with this particular situation.
Apparently, you know, we all know that most cheerleaders in professional sports usually don't make a whole lot of money. A lot of times it's just the exposure they're really getting. But in this case, apparently, you know, the cheerleading squad was formed, or was picked from all the people that tried out. They were going to the practices. They were having to provide their own, you know, makeup and towels and other things while they were in the facility. And apparently, like I said, they owed them some back pay or didn't pay them for some of the appearances and some of the practices that they're supposed to.
Well, I'm sure they'll get this rectified quickly. I would think it would be quite embarrassing, you know, to find your organization in court over, you know, very, you know, little money, because I don't think they pay a lot of money to cheerleaders. Again, they are a very intricate part of the marketing of the team, and they don't do it, you know, all year. They just do it during a certain time of the year. But I'm sure that they'll get this matter resolved. I think that's just more of an accounting thing than it is something they want to find themselves, you know, getting into a battle over.
Yeah, because I heard it on the radio earlier it wasn't even a sports channel. It was just a regular radio station talking about it. So I looked up the details on it, and that's what it looks like to me, is that just some numbers got crossed at some point, and somehow, whether they printed their checks out or didn't print their checks out or whatever it was, it just somehow they never got the checks to their hands, and you know, they're going to rectify it, because this would be a really bad publicity count right here for the Jets when they don't need it.
Yeah, I agree. They don't need that type of trouble. I'm sure they'll
quickly this resolved and get those young ladies the finances that are owed to them.
Yep, definitely so. And let's see, did we get to everything? I believe we did. Well, we're going to take a break, and Coach, I know you got to head on out. We got you busy doing some more assignment work, and for all those people that don't understand why you guys do all the assignment stuff and I stay here, actually this weekend I'll be out on assignment. I got to head south and do some stuff for Impact Media. But, Coach, I know you got to head out, so as we go to break, appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week.
All right.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. And we're back here on the Impact, on Impact Media's End Zone, Falcon Zone, Super Pro Football Show. I'm so excited about this show. I just can't say it straight. But, yeah, it was good having Coach on. We always appreciate the time he gives us. And, you know, we all stay pretty busy. And, you know, that's why he's got to head out. He's got to go work on some stuff. Of course, we do other stuff away from Impact Media as well. Reggie's out now. He should be touching down pretty soon. I hope he had a good trip there and back. I know he always does some great work for us. But I want to get into some Falcons talk here. Just a few things I wanted to go over because there has been a few things happen, and a lot of you guys ask about it. So, you know, did my due diligence, looked into this stuff, and it's stuff I want to know about too. The Atlanta Falcons have hired former GMs Phil Emery, who was in Chicago, and the former general manager in Tennessee, Rustin Webster, as national scouts. Now, the first thing that popped into my head is they will be great national scouts as long as they don't try to recruit people they typically would to be Bears or Titans. Sound guys asleep over there. Just kidding. No. Phil Emery was actually a pretty good GM. He's a good talent scout. I feel like he couldn't connect with the head coach and ownership in Chicago. Same thing with Rustin Webster in Tennessee. Tennessee's going through transitions. They're trying to figure out what works, so they're moving part after part after part, trying to figure out, you know, kind of what's going on. I would say the Titans are kind of like when your car breaks down. You keep, you know, unplugging this, plug it back in. You're trying to figure out which part it is that's making it not work properly so that you can fix that and build from there. Maybe it's a handful of parts. Maybe it's just one. So, you know, Tennessee's going through that transition. But, you know, adding two former GMs, that makes four in the front office for the Atlanta Falcons and Thomas Dimitroff, who is the actual general manager. You got Scott Pioli, who is the assistant general manager. Pioli is in charge of the roster. Emery and Webster here are going to be national scouts, and Dimitroff is in charge of the salary cap. So, I mean, there's four general managers, so it kind of gives Arthur some options as well in case things don't go right with Thomas Dimitroff. He's got three other people he could pull into the GM spot who have been there before and know what they're doing. You know, I think this is just a boost. And like I said, that's two more sets of eyes and two more brains with a lot of experience that will now be able to head up the Falcons. And, I mean, going into a draft, you have four general managers who are going to help find the right players. That's only going to make it better. Let's see. Congratulations to fullback Patrick DeMarco. Of course, defensive back Trufant, Julio, and Mr. Running Back Freeman, who all made it to the Pro Bowl. Congratulations. Hope you're enjoying Hawaii. If I'm not mistaken, they're all on the same team, which works out. That way, if you're a Falcons fan, you know which team to pull for. The Falcons have also hired Jerome Henderson away from the Dallas Cowboys. He is the passing game coordinator, which will move Raheem Morris to wide receiver coach, and he will also stay on as assistant head coach. Once again, this is another set of eyes, passing game coordinator. They're really trying to fix what was going on with the passing game. I mean, Matt Ryan still put up his numbers, like I said. He still had 4,500 yards. He threw 30 touchdowns or so. I think he had 15 or 16 interceptions, a little more than we wanted. But at the same time, really trying to fix what was going on with this. And I think adding Jerome Henderson was definitely a good move. I think you got to give Kyle Shanahan the benefit of the doubt a little bit here. Obviously, they did. They didn't get rid of him like a lot of you guys wanted. I think that him and Matt can connect over the break what little bit they're allowed to. Matt can really learn this system, and they can get a couple more pieces in here to make it work. And last, but certainly not least, I want to give you guys a couple more names as far as the Falcons draft, as far as the first round at least. You know, I told you about Kevin Dodd, defensive lineman from Clemson. I'm gonna throw a few more names out there that's been floating around. You got Darren Lee, who was a linebacker out of Ohio State. Plays a lot like he's a speedy linebacker. He can be moved around. He's a very good hybrid if need to be. He's very explosive. You know, very high-energy guy. So Dan Quinn definitely probably has him penciled in somewhere. Of course, you got defensive lineman Shaq Lawson, who went to Clemson. He was, he was teammates with Vic Beasley and Grady Jarrett, who are now Falcons. He's definitely one of the top defensive ends. You could put him on the other side. You could bookend him with Vic Beasley, of course. Put Grady Jarrett in the middle in the linebackers. He's just it's kind of like Taylor Lewan is as far as an offensive lineman, but this being a defensive end, he's a mauler in the fact that he just muscles and powers you out of his way. I want to throw in Michael Thomas, a wide receiver out of Ohio State. He's very strong. He's very tall. I think he's 6'2", 6'3", somewhere in there. This year he had 56 receptions, 781 receiving yards, and 9 touchdowns, which led the team. And if you lead Ohio State in offensive categories, you're not a slouch. He's a very good route runner and doesn't have many drops. I mean, he'd be an absolute great complement to Roddy and Julio. And, of course, I want to throw in, from Notre Dame, the linebacker, Jalen Smith. He's very athletic. He has a great, strong burst, closing speed, sideline to sideline. He's more than a tackle monster, which is, to me, what Paul Werlow is, just a tackle monster. It's nice that he gets all these tackles, but it's usually because they're already in the middle of the field, which means they at least have 5 yards at that point. But, Jalen Smith, he had a serious knee injury. He got in the Fiesta Bowl, so he could drop a little bit. A lot of people thought he was a top 10 guy, so at 17, he could be sitting there. And I think he's going to be okay after the knee injury and everything. But that's all the names that I have that I was going to throw out. Of course, like I said, we'll talk a lot of Super Bowl next week. Hope to have both the guys back in then, and may have a special guest as well. But for this week, that's going to do it. So I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks to the coach, Haywood Hill, for joining us for the first segment. Of course, we were live here on Blog Talk Radio for the End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show, presented by Impact Media. We'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons!